It's All Feelings Wrestling Podcast. I'm Allie.
I'm Ann.
And I'm Leah.
How are my girls?
Hey.
Very tired.
A little squawk from me. A little baby bird over there.
Did you see that tweet that was going around that was like talking about how like when you go to like, you know, before when we saw therapists in person, they would be like, hey, how are you? And you'd be like, good, how are you? And then you'd sit down and they'd be like, so how are you? And you'd be like, well, I'm doing bad, actually. Thank you.
I didn't see that, but
there's
that's real.
The pleasantry exchange and then the how are you? Do you remember, did your colleges do this where people like got real, like people are always just saying, how are you? And they don't really want to know. And it's like, yeah, you're American. Like it's just a greeting. Calm down.
I'm from New England. So like that's never, I've definitely seen it online, but never in person. New Englanders do not do anything with small talk.
Definitely don't. And I did go to college in the Midwest. So that is probably what was going on. New Englanders, like they don't say, how are you? They say, get the fuck out of my way.
Yeah.
That's what you're doing. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
When I moved to Massachusetts, it was quite a culture shock for a while there.
I was talking with my friend Sarah, who's from New York, and she was saying, like, if you fall over in New York, like, somebody, like, people will come over and be like, oh, my God, are you okay? And I'll help you up. And if you fall over in Boston, everyone will step over you and walk around you. And I was like, yeah, but, like, I back that because, like, it's embarrassing. Like, nobody wants to be acknowledged. I want to get up. I want to dust myself off. I want to walk away and pretend it never happened. And everyone who, like, imagines that I'm suddenly invisible is aiding me in that.
Right.
Like,
those are my allies.
Those are my allies. Do not look at me in my time of embarrassment.
And don't look at any of us. And that's the end of the podcast.
In our time of embarrassment here, when we're about to have a bunch of terrible opinions.
I don't know. I think I'm coming in with a wild energy. It was a weird week in wrestling. A lot of people felt really strongly about it. I think that your girls might be feeling a little different than a lot of people. And that's a stressful place for a people pleaser to be, but we have to be true to ourselves. We have to talk about our real feelings. So we're going to start out, Anne, you were live in person at Dynamite this week. Can you talk to us about the experience?
Yeah, Dynamite, its debut in Louisville last night. So I was going to go with my friend Jeff, but then his dad's in the hospital, so he had to cancel last minute, which was a serious bummer. And
Jeff,
I've been having
very, very good wishes.
Yeah, friend
to
of
you
the pod,
Jeff.
All my best wishes to Jeff and his family.
All of our traditional best, but for real.
Exactly. Yeah, but so I was really bummed. And I was having, like, a weird, stressful week. So my initial reaction was almost just like, I just don't even want to go. But then I thought, you know, my dad would probably go. Like, I've got an extra ticket, and I do kind of want to go. I didn't want to go by myself. So I asked my dad to go, who is not a wrestling fan, and wrestling is not his aesthetic, I would say, or his people.
what did your dad say when he got there?
Yeah, he kept, as we were walking, like, into the Yum Center and to our seats and stuff, he kept saying to me, this isn't an opera crowd. I was like, no,
that's not. That's the only thing I'm going to say now when I go to wrestling shows is just look around and say, this is not an opera show.
This is not an opera crowd.
Oh yeah, so he had a great time though, actually, like, and I had a great time. And I also, the only other episode of Dynamite I've been able to see was in Lexington like a year ago, maybe longer, but it ended up being the Jay Briscoe memorial show, which like people really liked, but because I didn't have any investment in him, it was not for me. There was a lot of Jay Lethal and a lot of, like, I didn't get to see most of the people I wanted to.
In a bit of a somber tone.
Yes.
I mean, not, you know, the wrestlers, of course, were grieving the way wrestlers do, but
yes.
it wasn't like a fun and games episode.
Yeah, you were like, I was kind of hoping to have a good time, but I'm at a funeral for someone I didn't know. So that feels weird. So it was kind of a disappointing experience. So, but last night I had a blast. I mean, wrestling is always so much more fun when you're there in person anyway, and the crowd's like lively and stuff. And then it was just like every match and segment was like people I feel like invested in. And like, I got to see OC, I got to see the Hung Bucks, I got to see Kenny. You know,
there's a lot of people who, like, a couple weeks ago, I would have said, I'm worried you're not going to see.
I know. Yeah, I know. Definitely did not think I would see any of the elite at all. And when I did see them, and we had, like, good seats, so, like, it was close. It was like, I feel like I haven't seen them in years. Like, I was so excited. You know, I was, like, going to cry. It was just like... Yeah, so, like, for me, it was, like, such a winner of an episode because I really thought I was going to get, like, a really terrible card, but it was just, like, oh, all my favorites and people I'm interested in, and even if they're doing stuff that's, like, sort of dumb, like, I'm getting a dopamine rush, and I had a blast, so, yeah, it was fantastic. And my dad afterwards, I didn't know if he was having a good time because he was kind of sitting there sober face most of the time, but afterwards he was like, I had a great time, like, they're so athletic, and, you know, like, it's like, when they held them up in the air? How were they picking each other up? And they, you know, he was into it. He was asking me about the soap opera storylines. I loved it.
It's soap operas for men. I'm so glad he saw it and he knew it.
Yeah. I was so obsessed with it because, like, you were visible and so was he. Yeah. And so I kept, especially, for some reason, you were super visible during the OC and Claudio match, and I legitimately did not watch like 30% of that because I was just watching you and your dad, and his face was so funny because it was just like the way, like, I, like, you would be given a tour of like an alien laboratory where he just was like, I don't know what I'm looking at, but I don't want to offend the locals.
Right. Yeah, totally.
He clearly brought a bit of an anthropologist's energy.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Which is one of the best things you can bring to a situation you haven't been in before, is you just look around curiously. You say, what is this?
Yeah, I'm here to learn. Yeah, and he has been to one other wrestling show. It was probably in the 90s. It was a WWE house show when my brother was like 12 or 13. My dad took him, which so I did feel like was like the sweetest expression of fatherly love, because I was like, it's like, my dad, he only listens to the classical station. He watches TCM. Like, he's just not like a...
It is so funny that he had to take two of his children to wrestling shows 20 years apart.
Yeah, right.
Oh my gosh.
He was like, I'm ready to go to another show today. Great time. He was really impressed. So.
Now you've got, next time they're back in Louisville, you can go with Jeff and your dad. And
that's double
the knowledge. Mm-hmm. Your dad's going to learn and he's going to live and he's going to love.
Do you think your dad is going to become like a regular listener of the pod?
I hope not, but he did say in the car on the way home, he was like, so is your podcast this week going to be about tonight? And I was like, yeah, it will. So he might be listening now, and I love that, and I welcome that, and I'll be very normal for sure.
Hello, Mr. Ian's dad, and we're so glad that you had a good time, and we're happy to have you here, and I'm sorry for things we might say. Let's briefly check in. So you had a great time, which is amazing. Leah and I would say we had a really normal time watching this episode. Would you agree?
Like, a medium to good time. And it was so interesting getting online. And I watched it from home. Usually I watch it with Sarah, but Sarah had a bad day at work. And so we watched it separately. So I was just hanging out with you guys online. And then I checked in with the rest of the internet and was like, oh, I didn't realize that this was incredibly divisive.
Yeah. The worst episode of all time, some people thought. I was like, wow, I had no idea.
It's very funny to, like, obviously sometimes you watch something and you're like, I know other people hate this and I'm loving it. And that is a difference of opinion. This really was a case where it was like, I'm having a totally inoffensive night's entertainment. I wouldn't say it's my favorite thing I've ever watched, but I've been happy to see people I wouldn't have expected to see doing things when I haven't seen them do anything in a while. So I'm having a perfectly nice time. And then to realize, like, oh, this is the end of wrestling as we know it, apparently. And it just was interesting because I don't feel after this episode, like, I don't feel like, wow, AEW is doing so amazing and I'm so happy with everything that they've been doing. Like, I've been a little annoyed with some stuff for a while, and I've been thinking recently, Like, I keep saying to myself, I'm like, you know what Tony needs? A 2-week vacation. And you know what we all maybe need in wrestling? A 2-week vacation where there's no wrestling. And then at the end of it, and this is my big idea. Do you remember on The Office when Michael Scott goes out into the office and says, I declare bankruptcy? Or he's at the train station or something. I kind of thought like that's maybe what Tony needs to do for kayfabe a little bit. Is it's 2 weeks off. He comes into the ring. He says, I declare bankruptcy. We start from scratch on some of this. I stand by that even now. I think that we are a little off the rails and we're having a lot of trouble finding those rails again. But at the same time, what an inoffensive night's television.
Yeah. I mean, I do think like an off season would probably help like both the fans and Tony for sure. Like just 3 months where everybody just chills for a little bit. But
it's good for shows to go on break.
I asked Sarah that recently because I've always wondered that because I feel like people who know stuff like the wrestling business are always talk about the idea of an off season as if it's absolutely impossible, but they never get into why. And I asked Sarah if she thought that there was any way you could make like that work, and she had an answer I did not expect, which absolutely popped me. She just said, how could you keep the wrestlers in shape? I don't know. How do they keep hockey players in shape? How do they tell them they're going to get fired.
Idiots.
But it's kind of, it is a total like vote of no confidence in the wrestlers. And I'm like, probably correctly.
Probably fair. Yeah.
That's probably right. I mean, I know that sometimes like, I know that wrestlers have talked about like, if they don't wrestle very regularly, it is harder. Like, it's harder on their bodies. I mean, I don't know in the long run, but, like, they definitely don't like it as much. But, I think it would be okay if we just took a couple weeks off here and there. Like, I don't think that would be the end of the world, and I think it might even be productive and positive. But I also think, like, I was thinking about it, and it's like wrestling is, like, we watch this show every week of the year. 52 weeks in the year. And if you think about the good old days of television where you got a 22 episode season, like 12 of them are like in the lower two thirds. 7 of them are in the lower third. You know what I mean? Like, it's like some of them are just clunkers. Some of them are bad.
When you watch especially an hour-long drama from the 90s, it's like, a lot of those episodes are just not good episodes, and that's
just filling
time.
But you get a little something out of them. And I didn't even think this was lower third episode, personally. No. Like, this was fine and fun. I had a good time. But it's also, it is okay if sometimes, sometimes you watch Beer Bad, you know?
Yeah. Right.
That's okay. Sometimes you watch Beer Bad.
I think, like, people have been enjoying AEW less, and so they're catastrophizing in order to like understand that feeling. And I'm just like, the amount of shows and bands and people that I've been like, oh, I think I'm a little less enchanted with you. You know what I mean? Like,
it's okay. Kind of just a normal part. It doesn't even mean the band's getting worse. Sometimes it's just like, it's just not where I am in my life this year.
Anymore. It's your older, worn-in sweater. I believe older, worn-in things can be the most beautiful of all.
we do know that about you. Yeah.
Someone in our group chat was like, well, the thing is that AEW has just become a normal American wrestling product, which means that, actually you should wander away for a couple years and then wander back for a couple years and then wander back out for a couple years. And it's like,
give yourself an off season.
You know, I don't think we're trying to tell anyone how to feel about it. It was just an interesting experience. And I know that I personally, it's like, I am always going to focus on the stuff that I liked or that I felt like shockingly happy about over the stuff that I didn't like. And I like that about myself as a consumer of media. I love to have fun. That's one thing about me. I'll have fun if I can.
Yeah. So, and the other thing too is like, obviously like the internet doesn't help anything. Cause in the 90s you just were like, that episode wasn't the best. And then you just kind of went on with your life and maybe you had a conversation with one coworker and you weren't like on Twitter all day long, like riling yourself up, you know?
I believe that you could send Dave Meltzer a telegram though. When you felt that's nice. when you were that mad about restful. A wrestling show. Yeah.
That sounds you very could call restful. In live to the Wrestling Observer Radio, I believe, and just have yeah. a word with him. Yeah.
That was your
outlet.
I love
the idea of like, it, like, just the beautiful image of someone watching wrestling, hating it, and being like, 7 days from now, I will call Dave Meltzer on the telephone.
And I'll really say what I think. Yeah.
You know, sometimes my...
Writing him a sternly worded letter on their typewriter, yeah.
My mother was always a really extreme proponent of delayed gratification. And sometimes in these modern times, I do think to myself, a little more delayed gratification, it would prevent tears. It would prevent oh, yeah. tears, because sometimes you sit with it and you just calm down and, yeah. you know.
Yeah.
So, well, let's talk about the show. And, you know, we are all allowed to feel how we feel, and that's okay. Mm-hmm. So Mommy's Little Baby Orange Cassidy opened Dynamite this week versus Claudio Castagnoli as a follow-up to last week's four-man, which also featured Bryan Danielson and Okada. So this is a classic little, I thought it was a good match. Orange Cassidy got ragdolled. He sold like crazy, yeah. and he won and retained his title. Afterwards, Mox barreled out and just like wailed on it, just beat him up. And he wasn't even fighting back. Like, I mean, I guess I know that's what a post-match beatdown was, but this seemed extreme. It went on for a while.
And the camera cut to you during the beatdown, and you just really disapprovingly shook your head.
You were so mean. He was hitting him over and over. Mox, come on, man.
Buddy, no.
I was losing it. I was not watching the show. I was watching you, and it was so funny. Like,
Claudia, do you know that Anna's so disappointed in
you? So disappointed in you. You're Mox? Being very mean right now.
I loved our seats. I don't know if I loved being on camera for the entire show.
We loved it.
I loved it.
It was Panda Cam for us, and we had a great time.
This is why I always do hard cam, because I'm like, I can't be on camera.
I want you on camera, though.
No.
Foiled. Yeah. If they had opened up that hard cam, maybe I would have been over there, but...
Yeah.
I think I'm gonna see if I can go to the hard cam section in Minneapolis, but actually,
I think the issue is that they need to sell more tickets.
Yeah.
This is the one time I become a ticket seller person where I'm like, yeah, they should sell more tickets so I can get my favorite seat.
Well, maybe they'll kick it up a notch. But anyway, eventually Mox stomped backstage, cut an angry promo, and said that he and OC are gonna fight for the All Atlantic belt again at Full Gear. So this will be I guess they weren't. Never mind. Okay. And then we also had some mid-match shenanigans where Yuta and Hook were getting into it. And then I kind of wasn't looking at the screen, so I heard Taz and commentary talking about how Hook laid hands on management backstage, but I don't know who the member of management who had hands laid on them was.
It was Pat Buck, which I'm like, okay, barely.
Well, who hasn't laid hands on
Pat
Buck?
Yeah, you can lay hands on Pat Buck. I don't think that is a crime that should... Because he said something like
monitors on Tony Khan.
Exactly. That's Taz really laid hands
like,
on management.
There could be real repercussions for this. And I was like, this company? It's probably okay. Any thoughts on what's going on with old OC and Mox right now?
Go ahead. I was just going to say, this was my dad's favorite match because the tag matches were too many men for him, but he liked a classic Amen. Singles match. He liked the feats of strength. He did lean over to me about halfway through when OC had just gotten beat, the hell beat out of him the whole time. He was like a little one-sided. I was like, yeah, that's right.
That's how you feel midway through, but don't worry. He's going to come back.
I was like, he'll come back. Although I don't know that my dad totally bought OC winning over enormous Claudio, but he was very impressed with OC pick Claudio up at one point. He was like, how did he do that? So I loved it. Yeah.
I do think Claudio did have a little bit of trouble selling for him. There was one DDT, swinging DDT, where Claudio was just like, moving OC around the loop.
Yeah, that is true. It kind of looked even dumber, like in, well, not dumber, but it looked crazier in person because OC looked really small when you're close up, and then Claudio is so enormous. It was
so
just
enormous.
Like,
yeah,
crazy.
We should really be thinking more actively about which big men are best at selling for small boys like Darby and OC, because when someone does a good job at it, it really is like, It's actually impressive if you step back and think about it.
We'll have to start keeping track, but I do think Swerve was really good with Darby.
Yeah, I think that's right. Yeah.
Yeah, I liked when he laid hands on him.
Yeah,
and Swerve was good with that, but I think he sold well. Is what I mean. Yeah,
I feel like Swerve was good with OC too. Like I just remember him doing like the little comedy hands when OC like tricked, you know, knocked him off the ropes in that the battle royale that they were in.
We'll have to go review the footage on this.
Mm. I know, but we should. I mean, we should keep track of like who's good at our handling our men.
Our beautiful who's small boys.
Who is best at handling small boys? That's an award we could be giving out.
Yeah. Do you guys agree that Mox should not win at Full Gear?
No.
You should not.
You really should not.
I'm a little confused about, not confused, but obviously they had to do a bunch of zags with the All Atlantic. And OC lost to Mox, and that's how Mox got the belt. And it was really close. And even then, it was like, okay, I think OC has to get this win back, like, at some point. Mm-hmm. But OC, I don't think, was going to get the belt back unless he was. I just don't know how we've ended up here. And I do agree that, like, OC has to win. But it's kind of like, and then what? Then he just still has this belt? We got to get this belt off him.
I know. He's gonna die with this belt in his mouth.
The whole international belt situation, like when you take even a tiny step back, you're like, well, this is full on bananas for sure.
I would love to know what the plan was. Like, I understand that, like, it really got fucked by Mox getting hurt and then Phoenix getting hurt. And so, like, it had to be, like, hot potatoed around. Mm-hmm. But, like, what were they gonna, like, were they gonna let Mox have a good run with it, like, before they did something? I don't know,
because it didn't seem like, I mean, that it would have been fine. I'm sure that Mox could have a good run with it, but it was kind of like, what is Mox gonna do with it, and how is this belt gonna contribute to the storylines of the BCC? And I didn't really see a clear way for that.
No, yeah. I mean, well, the moment that they started moving towards OC Mox, I was like, I want this feud. Like, I want this match. Like, I think this is going to fuck. But it's like, I didn't want, like, the thing is that, like, OC's reign was so good that someone really spectacular had to take it off him. But at the same time, like, someone really good isn't what the belt needed next. Right. Like, there should have been a way to have Mox beat OC for the belt, but then it ends up on Yuta. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah. I felt like it needed, like, Mox to not have it for very long. And then, Yuta or, like, Eddie or someone like that.
But then it's like, how do you get it off Mox that quick? Like, I mean, Eddie you could have done because you have the emotional component there. Like, I think it's not a popular opinion. But I'm like, I think Yuta could have taken it off OC. And I know that it's about building men up and that OC has to be like a main eventer like Mox, and that, you know, I understand all that. But when there is just a really, like, fiery emotional core to the relationship, I just feel like anything can happen.
Yeah.
Anything can happen. And of course, a man can lose to his mentor who he misses and is so angry at. Of course, he can lose to that man.
Well, maybe Mox will win, or not Mox, maybe OC will win at Full Gear and keep it and then go into a thing with Yuta where Yuta eventually gets it. I could enjoy that.
I'd like that. Well, it'll be interesting to see what happens. Bryan Danielson, this is a little injury report on a couple of people. Bryan Danielson did, I guess, break his orbital, which unfortunately I think of as a comedy injury because of Brandon Cutler. So I'm just like, it's the funniest injury you can get, actually. But he will be out for the rest of the year. So I guess he broke it in the match against Andrade, but then, like, sold it as an injury in the four-person last week.
Which made me a little bit like, so if you have a broken orbital, you can kind of just, I mean, I know it's Bryan Danielson, but it's like, it's cool if you just, like, wrestle and pretend it and, like, hope no one accidentally hits it.
I think Pac was wrestling with a broken orbital for most of that seven game.
Oh, was he?
Yeah.
I think he broke it in, like, the first or second, and then he just wrestled with it so they could finish the... Yeah, but I agree that I'm like, if I had a broken orbital, I probably wouldn't want to still be wrestling and just, like, see what happens. But And then commentary did point out during this match that they said Chuck Taylor obviously out with injury, which was the funniest thing anyone's ever said to me on commentary. Like, yeah, it's obvious if you're like obsessively looking at pictures of Chuck Taylor on Instagram and being like, he's wearing a boot in that one. It's not obvious to anybody else.
No,
because
nobody,
the man doesn't share.
No, he hasn't said anything on camera. Nobody has said Chuck Taylor, like, before that moment, nobody had said Chuck Taylor was injured. If you were scanning, like, the week before when he got on the ring with his boot, you would have been like, he's wearing a boot. But again, you've really had to be paying attention to the background extra.
You had to be like an, oh my God, Chuck Taylor girl, like staring at him to notice it. Yeah, it's like a regular person. It's not.
It was normal commentary behavior, but just so funny to me, where it was like, don't sell me a goose and call it a chickadee.
I was losing it, by the way. Our sorority sister, Awfully Waffly, was the week before he came out with the boot. So their pod drops on Saturday. I'm not sure when they record, but she was talking about how she had had a dream that Chuck Taylor was injured and had hurt his arm or shoulder or something. And she was talking about it, and her co-host didn't understand and was like, wait, he hurt himself? And she was like, no, don't put that in the world. Of course he didn't hurt himself. He's fine. Chuck Taylor is fine. And then she said it like 16 times. She was like, look at me. Chuck Taylor's fine. And then literally a couple days later, it was like, he's in a boot.
I'm so sorry to our sorority sisters, but you did this.
Yeah. I was all wondering there, who did it.
We've all been there. We've all done it.
Who cursed Chuck Taylor to do this on his own time? Crazy.
My God. Doing what? Well, as I said, I think I suggested kicking a wall like Brody King because of a Sixers-related issue.
That remains the most plausible scenario. And if Chuck Taylor wants to dispute it, he can feel free to tell us what happened.
Welcome to do an AMA, and I'm sure we'd all love to ask him a couple of questions. Okay. Let's move on. So Abaddon won a title shot four-way against Anna Jay, Sky Blue, and Willow Nightingale on Rampage. And then they got to fight Sheeta on Collision in what I thought turned out to be a very fun Halloween plunder match, featuring an ending where someone got a pumpkin, like Abaddon got a pumpkin jammed on their head. Is this right? Mm-hmm. Does this happen? Yeah. That happened, right? Yeah. I didn't imagine it.
And you were there.
Really fun time, I think, from what I remember.
Yeah, it was so fun.
I feel like Sheeta doesn't get a chance very often to be a goof. Yeah. And I like it when she does. Like,
I know.
You know, I like Abaddon.
And it didn't feel like a super, it wasn't funny. You know what I mean? Like, it wasn't a comedy match exactly. It's just like, it was fun.
Yeah.
The people who hate this one, sometimes I do get a little bit like, why do some wrestling fans hate having a good time? I don't understand. Like, this was just fun.
Do you remember the Christmas, match of the seventh series,
the tree.
You know what I'm talking about? Where hit him with the tree. Yeah. I was like, this shit happens, and sometimes it's okay. It's okay to laugh.
Yeah.
Sometimes we use a little props.
We're all watching people.
This podcast would say it is okay to laugh.
It is okay to laugh.
We're all watching people pretend to fight each other. Like, yeah, they can be a little silly sometimes.
Yeah.
We're taking so many of the members of the internet wrestling community in our arms. We're cradling and we say, shh, climb into Brian Cage's mouth with us. Climb into his mouth and have
climb
fun.
In there. It's so nice in there.
Warm, wet. Mm.
The only thing I did think was like funny where I was like, I don't. Like, this is where you guys really don't have, like, enough, like, experiences. Like, the crowd started chanting, we want pumpkins. And, like, Sheeta and Abaddon really pretended that they couldn't hear it. And it was obviously because later they had a planned spot with the pumpkins.
Yeah.
But it was one of those things where I was like, yeah, but there was pumpkin, like, candy holders. You should have, like made a goof with them or something.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, there should
zagged
like
a little.
Yeah. Because like, it's like, it was clear that it was like, they were like, well, we can't right now. That's later, guys.
That's the finale. Come on.
I'm really picturing both of them looking pleadingly at the audience. Like, we wish we could give you pumpkins, but we are going to later, but we can't do it yet. We just can't. Anyway, so that was really fun. And then we got a couple of different promo spots on Rampage and Collision. It was two of them that had the same setup, which I thought was very funny, even though I was very happy to see both of them. But it was Lexi, I think, being like, Chris, you wanted us to have this meeting because you have something you want to talk about. And what Chris wanted to talk about was how the mist has been impacting, especially Sky Blue's behavior. And Willow was like, I want to talk about it too. I think that we should all be nice. And Sky Blue was like, you're not my mom, and left. And then there's really no reason. This doesn't make sense, but we had a good time, so let's not get into it. Willow then fought Sheeta on Dynamite this week. And afterwards, so Tony Storm and lost, fine. But afterwards, Tony Storm ran out. And Sheeta chased Tony Storm backstage, and then all the lights went out, and Julia Hart appeared in the ring to menace Willow. And then Sky Blue came out. I love when we have everyone's coming out. Sky Blue came out, and there was a moment of like, oh, is she evil? Whose side is she on? But no, then she misted Julia to defend Willow. And it was Blue wild. Mist. Confirm or deny?
Yeah. Yes, it was. Yeah.
It's one of those things where I was like, well, that's not what I would have done. And I don't know that it adds up, but you're doing something new.
You're doing something.
You're showing me something that's not The Outcast. So yeah, I'll continue to watch. Sure.
Yeah. The audience popped big time for Julia Hart, like when the lights went out and then we realized she was out there, like the people around me were like losing their minds, which I loved. And like honestly, like this whole thing, I'm like, I don't know if this is a good story or not, but the fact that there is a story is really exciting. Right. Like, I watched Rampage and Collision, like, back-to-back on Monday or Tuesday, and the second time they had, like, the Chris, Willow, and Sky promo, I was like, are they just rerunning the one from last night? Like, is this the same promo? And then it was like, no, it was a whole new promo, like, following up on the match from the last night. Yeah. And it's like, this is all I want from the women is to, like, have, like, a storyline where they, like... Yeah. Do a promo, they have a match, they then have another promo that follows it up. Like, things are moving forward. It's not the same promo over and over. Like,
yes.
Yeah. So, like, do I know what the Blue Mist is? No. Do I? I don't feel confident that it's going to be a good story, but it's like, these are all people I like, and they're doing something, so that's awesome.
Chris's energy was cracking me up, though, because it's like, you know how we always say that the belt holder should be the president of the student body? That was her vibe, where she was like, okay,
totally.
Ladies. Like, you two both report to me, and I'd like to have a conversation about your behavior.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you're 100%. Absolutely right. That she was like, I have a responsibility as a leader of this backstage to talk to you about what's been going on, because I don't like the attitudes that I'm seeing. I agree that I think that it's like, does it all make sense? I don't think so. What is the mist lore? I don't know. I don't get it, but... At the end of the day, I like seeing movement in the women's division. I like that the storylines are advancing. I like that this brought multiple women's storylines together into one match and segment. To me, that is really good. And I was into it.
I was into that. Yeah.
It's extremely exciting. To even have something to talk about on the podcast about the women is pretty exciting, you know?
Yeah.
And the match with Willow and Sheeta was totally, like, super fun, too.
Great.
The crowd was really dead when it started, but by the end, they really had people going, which I felt very proud of them for getting everybody back at that 9:20 slot. It's like, you guys are great. I like both of you.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's great.
Yeah.
Do you want to take a second to comment on, is Tony Storm... So I was having a thought about Tony Storm where it's like we've talked about, could Tony push the comedy of this gimmick too far and like it could wear out? And the answer is yes. But it's also kind of weird that I was like, the timeless Tony gimmick doesn't really have any relationship to the storyline that she's in. Like, it's not really impacting or being impacted by anything. It's just like she's in a world doing timeless Tony and other stuff is also happening. I'm not that mad about it. I like watching the women do things, but do you guys have any thoughts about it?
It's just like, it's right on the line, right? Like, she can do as many like pitcher in pitcher nonsense as she wants because like I find pitcher in pitcher really hard to like pay attention to otherwise. And I'm very happy for that. But like, there's only so many times that like she can interrupt a match and have just the ramp go black and white. And before I'm like, all right, well, I don't know that this really makes any sense. Like, it's right on the line where I'm like, you can overdo this.
Yeah. It'd be better if she had like a motivation to anything or like just some connection to the thing she's running in on, really. Like, I feel like if they tied
it in,
it would help.
She's operating on like Looney Tune rules, like Looney Tune / Who Framed Roger Rabbit rules, where it's like, why is Timeless Tony Timeless Tony? Because that's who Timeless Tony is. Like, why does the Roadrunner run because the Roadrunner was drawn to run. Like, right. That is the vibe that she's bringing, which I think you can do a little bit of in wrestling, and it's fine, and we like it mm-hmm. sometimes. But I agree, it's kind of like, okay, but where are you going to go from here? Because we can't just do Timeless Tony Looney Tunes forever. Eventually, Tony's going to have to, she's going to have to be a real girl again. She mm-hmm. is. Yeah. Eventually.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
None of us like to think about it, but we all do.
Maybe if Sky Blue mists her with the blue mist, that'll bring color back.
Oh, wow.
Okay, Leah. All maybe right,
she could start moving forward in time. Like right now she's in silent films, but like then she gets to like a colorized Wizard of Oz genre of film.
Oh my God.
Start going forward through the decades.
Do you remember that History of Dance YouTube video that went super viral yeah. like 20 mm-hmm. years ago? If she had to recreate that.
It probably was 20 years ago.
Jesus Christ. I think
if
also,
she had to recreate that where she had to move through time in the period of like a pitcher and pitcher, I would really enjoy that.
That would be fun.
So fun.
I also think if Sky Blue misted her, you could do it in a way where it's like Pleasantville, where Tony is like startled by the color and then is starting to just be like, who am I? What is the point of my life? Like, you know?
Yeah.
So
yeah.
Well, lots of options that we've presented there. Excited to see what the women do. Let's move on to talking about our world champ, MJF. So MJF fought Kenny on Collision and won. And this was the match where we didn't get that much set up for it. It kind of seemed like they forgot to do it until the last minute. But then they did try in the last 10 days or so to get it done. So this was to see if MJF's reign was going to surpass Kenny's, and MJF won the match, so it will. The two shook hands afterwards, showed each other some mutual respect, and cut a really sweet go-home promo together where MJF was basically being like, I love Elite, and Kenny was like, I'm an old dog and I'm about to die. I'm going to the old dog's home to die. And then, like, towards the end of the promo had this very funny moment where he was like, I wonder if it makes them nervous when I act like I'm about to die and I won't be able to wrestle anymore. And he goes, but don't worry, I'm still here.
I feel like Kenny is in a very weird place emotionally. I don't know what that place is, but it's like, Kenny, I hope things are okay over there.
So God knows we've all had rough times, and sometimes Kenny is behaving in ways where I'm like, I see me in a depressive episode. That's what I'm getting from you right now. but it was very sweet. And then on Dynamite this week, so there was a running through line for the episode where MJF had to rustle up three partners for his four-way match versus Jay White and the Bang Bang Gang. And the purpose of this match was to get MJF's belt back. Now, one thought that I had was, you can't call your boss and tattle. You can't just tattle to your boss.
That's a great, yeah, the ref, security, and, can't do anything again, about this.
MJF
the police.
Is, like, there are some, like Mox wouldn't, right? Like, no. Mox would never, right. He would be like, I'm going to get it back when I strangle you. But MJF is not above tattling.
That's true. Yeah.
He loves to tattle. He's always talking about, like, the boss is making me do this. Or, like, I went to the boss and complained, but he said I still had to do this. Like, just go tattle.
And, you know, when Jericho lost his belt, like, outside an Outback Steakhouse or whatever, it got stolen out of his car. Like, they called the cops. They got it back. It's not even possible.
I want to say it was a Ruth Chris. But
I think it was definitely more upscale than Outback. But
I would like it if it were Outback. I think that was funnier. Yeah. And maybe we should onboard it, to be honest. Yeah, so, but he didn't do that, so they had this match, and he was going around knocking backstage, being like, will anybody fight with me? And nobody would, except the Acclaimed were dogging him, being like, we will fight with you. And eventually, he had to give in and accept them, because the alternative was Jay Lethal, Jeff Jarrett, and someone else. And I'm like, Saturn. I actually think they might accidentally have a pretty good win record, so, but I was worried. I didn't want to see
that. So worried. I was like, I can't be having that as my main event here.
It was very funny. It's like in wrestling sometimes where you're like, it's so clearly been set up, like it has to be the Acclaimed, of course. Mm-hmm. And then you're like, but Tony, you're making me really nervous. Mm-hmm. Because you could do anything. I mean, you're a rogue entity. So then they did have this match, and MJF ended up losing, but not before Max Caster like took some kind of kick or something for it, threw himself in his way to save him. And then Billy Gunn bullied MJF into scissoring Max Caster and all of them, which he had been saying that he would not do. Thoughts on the angle?
So MJF was so hot. Like, the audience was so into MJF. Like, every time he was on screen, they were freaking out. In this match, like, everyone was losing their minds. And, like, by the end of it, honestly, like, I wanted him to scissor them, like, more than I've ever wanted anything in my life, which was, like, a wonderful experience. Like, when wrestling really takes me to, like, a stupid child baby situation, like, I really transcended, like, my stress level, and I just was having such a good time. So, like, and him wearing the acclaimed gear, and, like, the guns were being super fun. Like, I had the time of my life in this match, to be honest with you.
The gear was really spectacular. I saw like a tweet that was like a close-up of what it was, because obviously I couldn't like fully tell, but like the fact that his elbow pads said "I love the acclaimed" like,
oh my god,
and his butt like was so covered great. In like scissors.
Yeah,
he's the
and we
best.
kept like chanting like "scissor him," and MJF like would glare at the crowd and be like, you stop that right now. And it was just super fun. So much fun.
Yeah. I thought it was really fun. I was really into it. I think some people were really mad about it. It's interesting because with MJF, I feel like I'm going to sound like an apologist, but I'm like, he's getting to the place where it's like, if I were him, I would be like, I can't do anything right for some of you. Like, some of you are never going to be happy with when I do serious stuff, you don't like it. When I do goofy comedy stuff, you don't like it. It's like, you actually just want me to be a different person. And it's like, you can't be. And clearly the crowds are really enjoying it. So it's kind of like, well, I honestly, what do you want?
I was kind of surprised almost at how into him the crowds were, because all I hear on the internet is like how he's ruining wrestling single-handedly or whatever. And it's like, well, he's pretty over. I don't know what to tell you.
And he's not a draw. He's not a draw.
Yeah. So I didn't see a single Burberry scarf in that crowd, I'll tell you.
And would you suggest that there is value to going outside and touching grass?
There might be a little bit of value, maybe.
It's interesting to hear.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, like, the thing is that, like, the match with Kenny was fantastic. Like, it was really fantastic.
Yeah, it was amazing.
A fantastic job. But that's what, there's a segment of the population that they want every MJF match to be like that, which is fine, but it's like, he proved that he can do that, and he can do it when he wants to, but that's not what he loves doing. Like, he loves being a little theater boy, and it's sort of like I'm sure he wants to please people, but it's like, ultimately he has to be the kind of person he is. I don't want him to be Kenny. Like, he does.
Well,
like,
but right. Kenny, we have that's Kenny. The interesting thing, though, because it's like, Kenny likes to be fun and funny too. And like, Kenny's, if you look at Kenny's whole title, obviously he does very serious, extremely amazing feats of strength and agility, and like, he's the best wrestler in the world. Like, I get it, but like, Kenny is a fucking dope and a dork and loves doing stupid comedies. And it's just like, sometimes I feel a little sad when I watch people respond to Kenny, because like, sometimes he will do things that seem to bring him joy, and people will just be like, Kenny needs to give us like Kenny Omega Osprey 3, and it has to be like the best match in the world. And it's like, well, he doesn't have to if he doesn't want to. Like, just let him have fun sometimes. Can't you see he's depressed?
He just wants to dress up like video game characters. Stop being like, he's a serious athlete.
Let him have fun, please. I don't know. And it's like, I know that I'm sure I understand that that Kenny is proud of his achievements and like is proud of being a fucking amazing, like, best in the world wrestler. I get that. I'm not saying that he isn't, but it's like all of these wrestlers, sometimes what they want and what we want are not the same things. And of course that can feel a little like chafing or unpleasant, but you do need to accept, like, people are who they are, and they're going to make the art that they want to make, and you can decide if you like it or not. But I don't know. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, and like honestly, in this episode, like I like the little running through line of the backstage bits. Too. Like they were short, but it was like a very it was like an actual targeted storyline where you're like, you're telling one story. MJF wants to find someone to wrestle, but not the Acclaim, but then he like, you know, gets bullied into it and everything. And it like, it worked for me. It wasn't like as scattered as other weeks have been. And it didn't feel like MJF took over the show. And I think he sometimes has more, like last week felt a little more that way to me. So I was like, to me, this is like MJF really working. But I mean, it's like, I like fun and silly stuff.
I popped so hard when Jericho opened the door and like, you were like, oh yeah, you guys had like a whole crazy history. This is crazy. Yeah. But also like the second part hitting where it's like, why is Jericho naked in Kenny Omega's dressing room?
That was wild.
Because they had a match, so they were getting ready together, and we'll get to it in the next section. And there was nothing untoward going on, as you may be implying, Leah.
It was very funny.
Naked in a dressing room together.
That it was just like waist up, so it was just like, well, he could be wearing pants or not. I don't know, but it's Kenny are having a good time.
It's kind of a the enemy of my enemy is naked in my dressing room situation. And if you don't understand that, I don't know what to tell you.
You don't understand a warrior's boss. Yeah.
I enjoyed all of this. I will say that there are moments with the Max Caster MJF situation right now where not to sound like a downer, but I'm like, you are skirting a little close to the edge of what I think that we should be doing consent wise. Just a little bit. Like, I like to have fun. I'm having fun, but sometimes I am like, Max Caster, you're not quite capable of getting to the nuanced level of characterization that I would like. And I would like MJF to sometimes seem a little bit more like, I do like how much you like me. Okay, but that's a little too much. And that's just a feeling I have.
Yeah. No, I agree. I agree. And also, like, it keeps being saved for me because, like, especially the last couple, I think Max has been doing a better job about being but sincerely, I like him. Like, this isn't like very beginning, it was a little bit too like, wink, wink. Wouldn't it be funny if I had a crush on MJF? And like, I think the last couple have been better about being like, no, I genuinely like him, which has helped a little bit. But like, MJF himself is right on the line of being like, kind of homophobic about it.
Well, it's like he's right on the line of being homophobic. Max Caster is right on the line of being dragged into HR. I mean, probably realistically, he's way over that line. But I guess like in the theater of television, he's right on the line. Yeah. So it's one of those things where sometimes I feel a little nervous when it's happening. Like it's like I'm having fun. We're all having fun. I just want to make sure we're all having fun here. And let's just keep having fun.
Max Caster being put in timeout when he acts up too much an important addition to the canon, though. And I hope that persists for as long as the Acclaim is together.
Yeah. Anthony Bones is doing great work yelling at him. Yeah, I agree. Yeah.
It's good to have a friend who doesn't want you to end up in HR. I think that is important. Yeah. Okay, what else do we have to say about any of this? Anything else?
Anne, did you enjoy explaining scissoring to your dad?
So during the segment, like, the crowd was on his feet. I was on my feet. My dad was sitting down, so I was not looking at him. I was enthusiastically screaming for them to scissor. I did not look at my dad. We did not discuss it after. He was very tactful. We did not have a conversation. I appreciated that. It's like, we don't need to.
You didn't scissor your dad at any point.
No, I did not. I did not scissor my dad. So
I love that. I love that your dad was like, Anne, what happened to you in there is your business. this is your thing. I'm just happy you had fun.
He's an anthropologist, but not asking too many questions, which is great. So, although during this match with when Billy Gunn faced off with his sons, like I really hadn't given my dad much like backstory on any of the like storylines or anything, because I was like, he doesn't really care, and there's nothing worse than someone trying to like fill you in on all the details when you're like, yeah, I mean, whatever, like I'm not gonna start watching this. But there were some times when I would like lean over and tell him something, or it was really loud in there, so I'd like write it on my phone. So when Billy Gunn faced his sons, I was like, oh, I think he would actually be interested to know these are his like real life sons, and it's fraught. So I like typed it on my phone, and then it was funny because it was so loud that my dad, like, to tell me he had like you know, understood or whatever, he would do like a very exaggerated face. So he went like, oh, like a very surprised, like, wow face. And he was very like, very interested in that. Those were his size. He was like, how old is he? And I was like, he's like 60 or something. And he was like, he looks great. Like, yeah. He does. Yeah.
He does. It's
a little troubling. Yeah. Yeah.
You know, in some people in wrestling, they have ways of looking great.
Wink. They do. So have some chemical ways. Yeah. And then in the go home speech, like Billy Gunn was being really nice to MJF and like they hugged and stuff. And my dad was like, is that one of his sons? I was like, no, that's not a son. Billy Gunn does not affirm his sons. So.
But in a way, are not all young men Billy Gunn's sons?
Yep.
When you work at AEW, are you not one of Billy Gunn's silly sons?
So true.
Okay, let's just briefly check in on the Elite, which we have in two parts. So first, Kenny is doing this storyline with Jericho, the Don Callis stuff. So he and Jericho fought 2.0 on Dynamite, and they did win. Don Callis was on commentary, and then he came out for a little bit of back and forth that I think was setting up a Full Gear match. And Kenny and Jericho revealed their two teammates for this Full Gear match, who will be Ibushi and Paul White. And that's something that's happening. I mean, it is
happening.
At the end of the day, I think that we do know that.
Paul White did not really look in shape to wrestle when he came out there.
No. He did not look good. No. I sort of feel like this whole, like, the whole Kenny Jericho thing has honestly been like a social experiment where they're like, how many things can we put into an angle that don't go together? Like,
yeah.
And you're just sort of like, well, yeah, I guess this is not working. Sure. Yeah. You found it. Oh, Paul White. Oh
yeah. Okay. They throw him in there. When Kenny and Jericho were in the ring together cutting promos, I just had the funniest reaction where I was like, this shouldn't be allowed, should it? Like, they're just two superstar, unaccompanied superstars, just there backing each other up, and they have no entourages. This doesn't feel right to me.
No.
And they both are doing such weird promo work right now, but I'm like not mad because I do find it so funny. Unfortunately, I just think it's such a crack up. And I don't know why it's happening. No. I just know that it is.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I would give anything to like understand what they're trying to do.
Yeah,
absolutely. I'd love to know what they sat down and said, this is what this storyline is for. This is what we think the storyline could achieve for each of us. I'd love to know if it's supposed to drive individual storylines for each of them in some way. I'm not angry, but I don't know what's happening.
It's more just a feeling of fond bafflement for me. Just kind of like,
yeah.
Huh. Yeah. And they were both obviously like announced from Winnipeg, and my mom's from Winnipeg, so my dad noticed. And so afterwards he was like, oh, they're both from Winnipeg, so are they like partners? And I was like, no, not at all. Like, they don't, could not be less. They just are
really
both from
just
Winnipeg.
Heard that I really just heard that like life partners. It's like, yeah. So they've spent their lives together.
Yeah,
they
just, you know,
came up from Winnipeg, started from Winnipeg, now they're here.
Okay. Right.
Well, I guess we'll simply see how it develops. But you know who else doesn't fully understand why Kenny and Jericho are aligned right now? It's the rest of the Elite. So we'll get into that for a minute. We had the Hung Bucks defending the ROH Trios titles against the Mogul Embassy on Dynamite, and they ended up losing. So they won them from the Mogul Embassy and then lost them back to the Mogul Embassy. It wasn't entirely their fault. So mid-match, Swerve came out to menace Hangman, and Hangman, just like a little hunting dog catching sight of a squirrel, just pointed and ran and just raced off and left the Bucks there to be like, I guess it's just us versus the Mogul Embassy now. So they did lose. Afterwards, Matt Jackson had a complete meltdown. So he overturned the commentary table. He was slamming a chair into the ring. Really, really mad.
It wasn't on TV, but he yelled at the ref real intensely, too. He was getting in his face while stuff was on the screen for backstage.
Oh, and then I forgot. Yeah. I totally forgot to watch back today and see if he said the F word.
Someone in our group chat said that he dropped an F-bomb, which I need to know. And I was,
we're gonna have to get back in there.
Yeah, I was offline almost all day today, and I do need to get in there to be like, because I don't know what I'm, what my reaction would be if I could hear Bette Jackson swearing.
I want to hear him swear. Ooh. I do personally.
Big mad boy.
So backstage, Swerve and Hangman were fighting, had to get hauled off each other, and they set a match for Full Gear, so they're going to fight each other. And then the Bucks, still in a bad mood. I've said the Bucks throughout here, but it's Matt Jackson. And Nick was just kind of trailing, like, where he goes, I go. And what he feels, I also feel. So the Bucks stomped into their dressing room, which they share with Kenny. And Matt was just, like, railing at Kenny, like, I don't, you know, we repaired our friendship and with Hangman, and now we never even see you, and you don't hang out with us, and you're fighting with this guy, and I don't know why, and he beat up my dad, and he's just yelling at Kenny and being like, now you bring him to our dressing room, which was so funny, like in our house. He's with him in our bed.
He's naked in our dressing room.
And then he was just like, whatever, have fun with your new friend. Stomped out, leaving Kenny with the most, like, put-upon husband look of all time. Like, he's getting a little headache, and he's just like, babe, no. Oh, oh.
It's just okay. an enemy of my enemy thing.
I can't go after him right now, but my God. This is going to be hard to work out later. Great stuff.
This was, by the way, the only, like, storyline thing that my dad asked me about later. He was like, obviously, I don't know the backstory, but, like, why were those guys yelling at the guys from Winnipeg? I was like, well.
Why was that homophobic man yelling at the life partners from Winnipeg?
Well, it started in 2016.
I was like, well, they've all been friends. So I, like, tried to do it. But when you're saying, like, so the one guy from Winnipeg, the younger guy from Winnipeg, he's friends with the guys that were yelling. And then that you're having to epithet them each time you're saying it. But so I kind of gave him a really brief explanation. He was like, and then he was like, oh, it's a soap opera. And I was like, yeah. Exactly.
You
know,
did you try using some, these can be so useful sometimes, if you say, like, the blue-eyed man, the brunette man. That can be really helpful to just differentiate between those. The blonde man with the angelic curls. This could really help. And then you can really tell them apart. And to, you know, that, it's just going to sound good.
That's such a good tip. Thank you so much.
You're welcome. It's my pleasure to help. Do you guys have any high-level thoughts about what is going on with the Elite, with the Young Bucks, with Hangman, with the ROH title?
I was so excited to just have any, like, emotional content from the Elite at all. I was like, oh my God, like, they're mad at him. Like, and it totally makes sense they're mad at him. Like, they're talking about how they all reunited and, like, great. So I'm, like, very excited that anything is happening. I mean, was it much? No, of course it wasn't much, but these are the crumbs I'm going for.
But the best part about the Elite is that, like, when they set up a conflict, it's like, I mean, obviously, like, I'll die for Matt Jackson against anybody, but, like, there's, like, nobody's right and nobody's wrong in anything. So it's kind of like, it felt to me like Matt was mad at Hangman, but his friendship with Hangman is too fragile and too new. And also, like, he kind of understood, like, why Hangman left. So he couldn't yell at Hangman. So he took it out on the next target, which happened to be Kenny. But also he had a point where it was like, you know, like, this guy really, really terrorized us. Are you freaking kidding me? But Kenny really could have turned around and been like, oh, did you ask me before you brought Hangman back into the Elite? Or I mean, did you tell me that we were going to be okay with it, you know, right? Like, that's the best part, is that I'm like, yeah, like, all of it is, they're all pretty bad at being friends. Like, yeah. It's the best. Yeah.
They're all on their worst behavior all the time. They're constantly, like, sublimating their anger and, like, trying to, like, they're, like, just, it's coming out in places that it shouldn't be coming out and not in the places where it should be coming out. That's the fun of them. This is the Mommy's Little Unreliable Narrator faction.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's the best.
Totally.
They're kind of like the Elite are kind of like the gang from It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia.
It's true.
Yeah. It's true. And then, and it was interesting too that Kenny didn't have like a great explanation for why he's with Jericho either, but it to me felt a little bit like Kenny just has not been paying too much attention to like what he's doing or what's happening to him is almost how it felt to me. So he's like being a terrible friend, you know?
His vibe was very funny because it was like, he didn't actually look that offended that he was being yelled at either.
He wasn't like,
don't yell at me. He was sort of like, yeah, well,
he
is here. I mean, I understand you're yelling, but he's here.
I've kind of made a commitment. Will be
here. Again, when you're experiencing a depressive episode, you do sometimes look around at what's happening and you just think, I don't really know. You're right. I don't know why this is happening, but I know that I don't have the energy to do something else. So just going to keep being this pretty much.
Right. And honestly, like, it kind of makes sense too. There's like Jericho has lost his entourage. So he just like grabbed Kenny and Kenny was just like, oh, I mean, I guess like
Kenny's vibe through all of this has really honestly been like, this might as well happen.
Yeah, exactly. 100%.
I will say this. There has been a lot of discourse in the IWC and a lot of people
discourse in the IWC.
Yeah. I don't want to surprise you. A lot of people calling AEW out. But I'd like to draw attention to something I don't see people holding Tony accountable for. Please. And I'd really like to make a point of saying we need to talk about the fact that Matt Jackson was wearing a shirt through the whole match.
It's sick. It's literally disgusting. Sick.
Okay. Was it on TV? Because there was a moment he was going to get in the ring and he started to pull his shirt up, but then he stopped in the middle.
And he pulled it back down.
Yeah, and it was just kind of like a little bit rucked up. I was like, wow, what happened there? Yeah.
These are the things. Okay, well, I like what I heard, but.
Nobody wants to speak truth to power, but I'll speak it. That shouldn't have happened.
Do you think?
Matt Jackson wanted to get that shirt off and something in the ring prevented that from happening.
Do you think?
Management.
Do you think that management told management said, you keep that shirt on. Nobody wants to see your titties. You stay clothed or you're going to answer to me, Pat Buck.
Why is Pat Buck the funniest possible name for that?
I don't know. That is such a good. Thank you for raising that point, Leanne. And we'll be getting on the red phone to Tony Khan about that. Not that he's ever answered it once.
In fact, we've legally been prohibited from calling anymore. But we do anyways.
I think
we're gonna wait 7 days and we'll call Dave Meltzer. We'll really have it out.
Can you imagine if we wrote Dave Meltzer and was like just like a screed about how offended we were by Matt wearing a shirt? Like,
I think Dave Meltzer would learn something. Yeah.
He would take it completely seriously, and he'd be like, "I've been hearing from some people that they think there might be that Matt Jackson for some reason isn't allowed to take his shirt off, and that's not the case. The wrestlers, of course, if they can take their shirts off. It's up to each person, and they can decide, and so they can decide if they want to take their shirts off."
There was an episode, I forget why Sarah went without me. She went to like a tape. I don't remember what the deal was, but she was in her feelings afterwards. She was really upset about something that had happened and she was all worked up. And so she came home and she wrote Dave Meltzer an email meaning to be like, this is what I saw. This is what I observed. These are the spoilers, blah, 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 which she does every time she goes. But she accidentally just did a diary entry where she was like, these are the emotions that I've experienced. And he didn't answer her. But the next day on the radio, he was just like, and people were very worked up. They felt very strongly. They were very worked up.
Maybe we should start emailing Dave Meltzer.
Just our feelings. I think he'd love it. Just
I think
like,
we should just start every day.
The new live
like...
journal is Dave Meltzer's inbox.
I mean, it would honestly be so funny if we just started writing him stuff about Matt Jackson taking his shirt off, and Dave Meltzer was just like, "I don't know what to do with this, but it is something I'm hearing." I think he would get a different impression of the IWC, and I think it might be broadening for him.
Honestly, I think the best thing in the world for every single man in the IWC is a little bit of would be a couple of broadening perspective emails. So those titty emails are going out soon. I only have one thing that I must say before we sign off. Miro and CJ got Ryan Nemeth. They got him.
It was pretty upsetting. Poor little Ryan Nemeth.
And really we don't know what they're doing to him.
No. He's too handsome. I know it's not nasty. Safe.
Maybe, I know it's not good.
Maybe that's how Dolph Ziggler debuts, is that he has to go into the sex dungeon.
He's like, my brother's being sex trafficked. I've got to do something.
Go get him.
It would be the first time we've seen someone get rescued from sex trafficking at AEW. Mm. Dante Martin never got rescued.
No.
To this day.
That's where he is today, no, I assume.
This sex traffickers got bored and abandoned him, actually. And so he just went back to Matt Sydal.
Oh, my gosh. Wrestling is what it is, you know? Mm. Well, I think we're all sending our best to Ryan in the dungeon. Mm. I hope he's hanging in there. I hope he gets out of there.
Stay strong, buddy.
Stay strong. The thoughts of the people
are
with
you. Thoughts and prayers, yeah.
Did I miss anything that you guys were desperately hoping to talk about?
No.
That was a good time.
No. Yeah. You know what? At the end of the day, we're in the mouth. We're in the dirigible. We're sailing in the stars, little Nemo. You know. So, on that note, I've been Allie.
I've been Ann.
And I've been Leah.
This is Tunnel Talk. Our theme is by Chris Corkin. You can find us on Twitter and Tumblr at Tunnel Talk Pod via email at tunneltalkpod@gmail.com. Please rate, review, and subscribe to us wherever you get your podcasts. And come on back next week.